Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, June the 15th. Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I am Zipora Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Thank you for joining us live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Africa prepares to commemorate the Day of the African Child on Saturday amid troubling times for the youngsters.
How does Africa celebrate an African child amongst all the abuse, rape and murder of children in Africa? The law must take its course. The perpetrators must be locked in jail.
Cameroonian President Paul Biya proposes postponement of the parliamentary elections, and some opposition politicians are backing this move.
The elections this year are not really a necessity. The most important problem today is to put the Cameroonians together so that we can solve our problems, including the Anglophone problem.
These are some of the stories we've lined up for you. Plus, it's the second day of the FIFA World Cup in Russia. Stay with us for an in-depth analysis. But before we start off, let's see the other headlines making news across the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. A major row over migration within Germany's Grand Coalition has been intensifying after several media outlets fell for a satirical tweet claiming Chancellor Angela Merkel's coalition had collapsed. The tweet claimed that Interior Minister Horst Seehofer would end his Bavarian CSU party's seven-decade partnership with Merkel's CDU party. But this was quickly denied by Merkel's spokesperson, Stefan Seibert. Speaking earlier in an interview with public broadcaster ARD, Bavarian Prime Minister and CSU member Markus Söder said something needs to change.
For a long time, there has been a desire among our population for a fundamental change in asylum policy. People are deeply insecure, sometimes outraged of what is happening here. They wish Germany's borders should be secure like the borders of our European partners. I believe that if 2015 should not be repeated, then we need a fundamental change. This includes the protection of the borders.
The disagreement over how to address Germany's migration policy is threatening to break up Germany's three-month-old government. Also in the country, a police officer shot and seriously wounded a knife-wielding 27-year-old Syrian asylum seeker in the city of Koblenz late on Thursday. German prosecutors said Friday the man is under investigation for attempted manslaughter. The police officer's actions are also under investigation. Controlled power outages across South Africa went into their second day on Friday as employees of national provider Eskom continued a protest over pay levels. Employee unions have been demanding a 15% pay hike, but Eskom, which provides more than 90% of South Africa's power, has refused. The public utility company threatened further outages over the weekend and said the protests were illegal and illegitimate. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. U.S. President Donald Trump has announced hefty tariffs on $50 billion U.S. dollars worth of Chinese imports. Trump says China has an unfair trade practice that undermines U.S. technology and intellectual property.
We're putting tariffs on $50 billion worth of technology and other things. Because we have to, because we've been treated very unfairly.
China swiftly responded by imposing equal tariffs on U.S. imports. The moves could ignite a full-on trade war between the world's largest economies. And Spain has rescued some 270 mostly African migrants from more than two dozen boats in the Mediterranean Sea. Rescue boats, a helicopter and an airplane from a European border agency took part in the operation. At least three bodies were also recovered. According to the UN, nearly 800 migrants have died so far this year trying to cross the Mediterranean. And now in sports, Uruguay beat Egypt 1-0 at the FIFA World Cup in Russia. Also on Friday, Iran plays Morocco and Portugal will face off against Spain. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. A quick mention to you listening to us on Facebook page, DW Africa. Mahamud Nawar says hello. And Sebastian Awufur says he's listening live from Ghana, Northern Region. Welcome to the program.
Now, tomorrow, that's Saturday, June the 16th, the African continent is commemorating the Day of the African Child. The day encourages all African states to respect and uphold the rights of children.
Though there's much to celebrate for the African child, such as the universal education in several African countries, as Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, children in southern African countries face tough challenges such as sexual abuse and even murder.
The African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child clearly states that children must be protected from abuse, torture and child labor. They cannot be married off nor be recruited in armed conflicts. They are also to be protected from sexual exploitation. However, this is far from becoming a reality in most African countries. A 2017 study by the Children's Institute of the University of Cape Town shows that one in three South African children will experience sexual or physical abuse in their lifetime. 8-year-old Nokubonga Nonyane from Masoi village in Mpumalanga province is the latest victim of that abuse. Her lifeless body was dumped in a ditch after she was raped and murdered. And Nandi Mayatula Khoza, Gauteng province member of the executive council responsible for social development, says this cannot be allowed to continue.
In the first instance, our children must not be abused. Our children must not suffer from neglect and exploitation. Our children must not be murdered. But when it happens, our law enforcers need to take it very, very seriously. When it is reported, investigations must happen swiftly and smoothly and urgently.
In 2016, Zimbabwe Childline received over 600,000 calls from children who suffered abuses of different forms. What's even more disturbing is that an official of the court confirmed that 60% of such abuses are perpetrated by close relatives who are best placed to protect the child. Statistics from the Malawi Police Service shows that sexual abuse cases involving children increased by 13% in 2016. Vitres Matutu, chairperson of the Zim Imbokoto, an organization fighting for the rights of women and children in Johannesburg, says all hands should be on deck if the war against child abuse is to be won.
As I stand here, I ask myself, if an African child is celebrated in this continent, how does Africa celebrate an African child amongst all the abuse, rape and murder of children in Africa? The law must take its course. The perpetrators must be locked in jail. They must not get bail. What for?
As in past years, many gatherings are expected on Saturday, with tough messages and warnings against child abuse made in many podiums. But maybe it's time for the continent to stop talking and start acting on this issue.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting in Johannesburg.
And you have been giving us your views on that story. Moses Wangunyu from Nairobi says, imagine if in every village there was a committee that ensures all children access nutritious food, clean water, go to school, and the community spaces are safe for children.
I think that would be a very beautiful world, or Africa for that matter.
That's what we wish for.
Pikatsi Yenyi wrote on Twitter, and who is going to address the significant number of African children who never attended school?
SOS Villages in Uganda sent a message that reads, Uganda has achieved a number of milestones towards advancing children's rights. And they go on to say, as we celebrate the Day of the African Child tomorrow, what actions are you as an individual taking to ensure that no child is left behind?
Very good question there. And we wish all the African children a very happy Day of African Child. Let's move on now to Europe. And the migration issue has been a hot topic this week, especially after Italy denied entry of a ship carrying refugees. In Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel is facing a serious challenge within her coalition party that could threaten her hold on power. Her interior minister, Horst Seehofer, from the conservative CSU party, is openly defying her.
Seehofer wants to introduce a master plan for migration under which some refugees will be turned away at the German border. But Merkel has rejected the idea, insisting instead on finding a joint European approach. Marie Sina has more.
This week has clearly demonstrated the deep political divides that exist in Germany on the topic of migration. Angela Merkel's coalition partner from the CSU, Interior Minister Horst Seehofer, maintains that she abandoned her liberal migration policy and tightened border controls. The German Chancellor, on the other hand, is pleading for more time to come to an EU-wide solution.
I personally think illegal migration is one of the big challenges for the European Union. So I don't believe we should act unilaterally. We should not act in an uncoordinated way, and we should not act at the expense of third parties.
Und dass wir nicht zulasten Dritter handeln sollten.
The disagreement between the sister parties is threatening the future of Merkel's coalition just 3 months after it took office. Merkel now faces intense pressures to get deals with her European partners during what's looking to be a divisive summit later this month. But issues did not only ensue in Germany. French President Macron met Italy's new premier Conte today to try to patch up relations after sparks flew between the two countries over Rome's rejection of a migrant rescue ship. Macron had accused Rome of irresponsibility for refusing the boat carrying more than 600 migrants. A European-wide consensus on the issue during the summit that's scheduled for 2 weeks from now is looking increasingly difficult.
That's Marie Sina with that report.
And now back to Africa. Cameroon has accused Amnesty International of disseminating crude lies after it said security forces had committed summary killings, arrests and property destruction to try to crush a separatist insurgency.
This comes as Cameroonian President Paul Biya has called for a postponement of the parliamentary elections to next year. In his letter addressed to the Senate and the National Assembly, Biya wants a one-year term, which is set for October this year. Members of Parliament have started debating on the issue. Sonia Pointy has more on this report by Henry Fotso.
Cameroonian presidential term runs for 7 years in comparison to the parliamentary one, which goes for 5 years. This year's election have coincidentally coincided, which has prompted the current calls for postponement. Cameroon started this busy election year with the senatorial elections in March to be followed by the council and legislative one. And that is exactly the bone of contention, as many argue that the country cannot organize 3 elections of such great importance the same year due to the ongoing economic and security crisis. Members of Parliament have just started consultations on whether their term should be extended, which is in line with Article 15 of the Constitution, as DW's Henry Fotso explains.
En cas de crise grave, le président de la République.
In case of serious crisis, the President of the Republic may, after consultation with the President of the Constitutional Council and the offices of the National Assembly and the Senate, ask the National Assembly to decide by law to extend or abridge its mandate. In that case, the election of a new assembly shall take place at least 40 days and not more than 60 days after the expiry of the period of extension or abridgment.
A postponement, if necessary, will come as a relief to some, like opposition member Valentin Dogmo from the Manidem Party.
The elections this year are not really a necessity. The most important problem today is to put the Cameroonians together so that we can solve our problems, including the Anglophone problem.
Although the Constitution allows for postponement of the legislative elections to the end of next year, it is not the case for the presidential polls, since Article 6 of the Constitution provides that it takes place in less than 50 days before the end of the presidential term. Therefore, the presidential elections are set for September this year, but at the moment, the question on whether the election will be postponed remains unclear, at least until the members of Parliament and reach a consensus.
Sonia Pointier with that report.
And on our Facebook page, Intong Ivo says the president orders the National Assembly. He does not consult. This man controls everything. That's the president, Paul Biya. He controls everything in this country. So whether he sent a letter to the Senate or not, in fact, he has already postponed it because no one dares object any bill.
Chanuna Mashal says there is no question of revisiting a 56-year-old field unity that has only transformed southern Cameroonians as endangered species. And he goes on to say there's urgent need by the international community to force him out to the negotiating table.
And Paul Eze says if elections are all that most African countries desire, then they have failed. The people first before anything. The English region has been maltreated. They are all Amazonian supporters who are speaking here. Women raped and young men killed and houses burnt down with all men and women in it. Thank you for those comments. Please visit our page, Facebook, DW Africa, and we'll read those comments whenever we can. You're listening to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Still to come, Egypt has lost its opening World Cup match to Uruguay. Is this the end of the road for the Pharaohs?
Egypt still has a chance. It has lost, of course, 1-0 to the strongest team of the group. It can still, you know, win against Saudi Arabia and perhaps even hold Russia. Only that Russia has an advantage. It has so many goals in the bag.
Stay tuned for that interview with our colleague Isaac Mugabe. And for those who have been following our African Road segment, we will hear the story of Patrice Lumumba, Congo's first prime minister, who was assassinated shortly after independence. But now, Ethiopia is open for business. At least that's what the new government wants the world to believe.
Facing a foreign currency crunch, Ethiopia is now looking to privatize some of the country's parastatals, such as the national carrier Ethiopian Airlines. From Addis Ababa, Koleta Wanjohi reports.
Ethiopia's growing external debt burden and the delay or failure to kickstart production on the country's mega projects is to blame for the shortage of foreign currency. That is according to Ethiopia's National Planning Commission. As such, the country is now seeking privatization of key companies like the national carrier Ethiopian Airlines and Ethiotelecom, the country's only telecommunication company, in a bid to raise foreign currency. Nora Dihel, a senior economist with the World Bank, says Ethiopia's decision must be accompanied by other reforms to remove the existing financial constraints in the economy.
A number of structural and institutional reforms, a number of reforms in the financial sector, would be crucial to eliminate the forex shortages that the country is facing at this stage. And related to that, an improvement in competitiveness in general will also increase exports, which will contribute to an increase in foreign exchange inflows into the country.
The foreign exchange crunch in the country is already threatening the sustainability of sectors that highly depend on importation. Abera Bekele is the chairman of Ethiopia Construction Contractors Association. He says their work has slowed down because they cannot import the heavy equipment and materials they need according to schedule.
The construction itself needs source of materials, local materials, factory-produced materials, imported materials, and also equipment, imported equipment, spare parts for equipment. So as far as the import is concerned, well, we have to share with all others, with medicine, with other imported materials. So when we take this share, we may have problems in getting the fair share.
The Ethiopian government says it needs more than $13 billion over the coming 2 years for oil importation, private investment, upgrading of existing projects, and for repayment of external debt. A devaluation of the Ethiopian currency in October 2017 by 15%, targeted at boosting shrinking export and increasing foreign currency, is yet to bear results. Zerihun Getachu, a research analyst for the World Bank in Ethiopia, says it will take time.
But still there are challenges in the facilitation, in the logistics, so that may take some time so that the export will react to the price incentives. And also some of the major export items, for instance, coffee and oil seeds, they are not expected to quickly react to the price incentive.
Foreign companies like South Africa's MTN and Vodafone have already expressed interest to buy into the state-owned telecommunication company. The new government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says it will prioritize foreign investors in order to boost the inflow of foreign currency.
Koleta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa.
DW African Roots.
A Congolese national hero, Pan-Africanist, or apostle worker turned politician. All of these describe Patrice Lumumba, Congo's first prime minister who led the Central African nation to independence.
But his anti-colonial rhetoric and Pan-Africanist ideology, coupled with support from the Soviet Union, made him an enemy of the West, leading to his early death. For that, Lumumba made the list in our African Roots segment. Michael Wambi with his report by Tamara Vakenage.
Compelling the white man to respect, announcing in a clear, loud tones from this time on, this country no longer belongs to him. You made the brothers of your race lift up their heads to see clear, straight ahead, the happy future promised by deliverance.
This is Belgian Congo, January 1959. Patrice Emery Lumumba is paying tribute to to the victims of the riots that just took place in the capital, Leopoldville. The pro-independence protests were violently suppressed by the Belgian colonial authorities. The shift to independence had started, and Lumumba emerged as the leader of the anti-colonialist movement, explains Kambai Bwatshia, history professor at the University of Kinshasa.
Ce mouvement a eu un mentor, un homme assez bouillant.
This movement had a mentor, a man with a fiery temperament, open to the world, Lumumba. A dazzling man, a man who did not like injustice, a man who knew what alienation was, who had followed the development in Guinea, how the Guineans said no to the politics of the French community. And Lumumba took this path and he went against the Belgian colonial politics.
Lumumba, a former postal employee, gained his political education through reading. His party widely won the first elections held in May 1960, and on June 30th, speaking as a Congolese prime minister during independence ceremony, Lumumba gave sharp response to King Baudin of Belgium.
Hommage aux combattants de la liberté nationale.
Tribute to the fighters for national freedom. We have known disgrace, insults, and blows that we had to endure morning, noon, and evening, because we were Negroes. Who will forget the shootings from which so many of our brothers perished, the cells into which those who refused to submit to a regime of injustice, oppression, and exploitation were brutally thrown.
The Congolese present in the room widely cheered, but for Baudouin, Lumumba's uncompromising speech sounded like an affront. That is what Professor Kambai Bwatshia thinks.
Il a offensé le roi. Il a offensé la Belgique.
He offended the king. He offended Belgium. After the speech, he went into turmoil. The public force dislocated. There were no high-ranking black people. The public service deteriorated. Security deteriorated. Lumumba did not have the legitimate tools to govern. He was alone and alone and alone. The Belgians and the imperialists completely disoriented the country. There was a terrible chaos.
This chaos was illustrated shortly after independence ceremony by the succession of the Katanga and South Kasai provinces. Patrice Lumumba was later arrested and then assassinated under disturbing circumstances in January 1966.
That report was written by Tamara Vakenage. Remember, it is one of our series in African Roots, which is produced in cooperation with the Gerda Henkel Foundation.
And Zipporah, I was just doing a little bit of reading on Patrice Lumumba. It's interesting how he also died when he was arrested. I read that the rebels even forced him to eat his own speech, the speech that he made during this independence, which he declared when he declared that Congo was now a free country. So I'm sometimes like taken by how much hatred we can have for one another.
That is quite disturbing, because at the end he was a hero.
Exactly. Now he's remembered as a hero of Congo. I mean, he's a Pan-Africanist and he was really for the unity of Congo rather than the breaking up of the country. Anyway, let's now move to sports. And Egypt was the first African team to take to the pitch in the second day of the FIFA World Cup in Russia. The Egyptian Pharaohs, however, lost 1-0 to Uruguay in their opening match.
Definitely not a good start for African teams. I talked to my colleague Isaac Mugabe on what this means. First, I wanted to find out if this could mark the end of Egypt's chances of progressing from that group. Take a listen.
Absolutely not. I mean, the game between Egypt and Uruguay was really an interesting one. Egypt tried, hard to fend off, strikers like Luis Suarez and Cavani. These are dangerous strikers. They play for Barcelona and Paris Saint-Germain, respectively. And they really, without their star player, Mohamed Salah, you could see that there's a missing link within the striking line. You could feel it that, the absence of Salah really is affecting the whole team. Nevertheless, their midfield, players tried, hard, to keep the Uruguayans, who have counterattacks that are really pretty fast, to keep them at bay until the dying minutes. We saw that free kick, 8th minute, that resulted into that superb header from Jimenez. You could see really that Uruguay wants the 3 points badly. Well, In the last 2 minutes of the extra time, Egypt also tried to fight hard, but it was too late. That said, Egypt still has a chance. It has lost, of course, 1-0 to the strongest team of the group. It can still, you know, win against Saudi Arabia and perhaps even hold Russia, only that Russia has an advantage. It has so many goals in the bag. But at least, you know, we can see the remaining matches. If the coach can reorganize his defense lines, I think Egypt still has chances. After all, he has only lost 1-0, not a bucket full of goals.
Going by this result, what are the chances of the other African teams in this tournament?
I'm sure they're watching and they know this is the World Cup, the biggest tournament. What is always missing about our African teams is that they tend not to put in so much discipline when they are at the international stage, like the World Cup. You know, those, when I talk about discipline, I mean dangerous tackles, especially, you know, in dangerous, you know, position of the field, like at the back there or on the 18-yard box. So the chances are there. The African players have potential to win games. Nigeria is going to play Croatia. Croatia is one of the strongest teams in Europe. And also Nigeria has it's a star-studded, you know, squad. They just have to concentrate. And of course, remember to maintain discipline on the pitch, because any dangerous tackles, the referees won't hesitate to award even penalties or fouls.
And now let's talk about the world champions, of course, Germany, because they will be on the pitch on Sunday against Mexico. Should we expect any surprises?
Football is football. Anything can happen on the pitch. I mean, the Mexicans are not a joke when it comes to dribbling and, you know, going past or whizzing past the defenders. They are good at that. And when you look at the previous games that Germany played, it has only been able to win one international friendly. That was against Saudi Arabia, 2-1, you know. It tells a lot. They have learned also their lessons. So they have really a great task ahead to prove that actually they can turn things around.
That is my colleague Isaac Mugabe wrapping up about today's match and what to expect from the African teams.
Right, and many of you are not very happy with these results from Egypt. Elhosa Godwin says, I felt for them. The face of Egyptian player Mo Salah when the guy headed the ball in the goalpost made me share their pain. So disappointing. They did well though.
Yeah, Chinyere Enyefe says, a very difficult day for an African team without their superstar Mo Salah. An uncomfortable position, attention is now shifted to their second game. And hopefully Mo will be on the lineup to rescue the national team.
George Sando says, Egypt can do better with that defense and center. Hopefully good results in the next game.
So everyone is actually sad with this result.
Yeah, but there's some optimism. You know, there is some hope at the end of the day. Maybe if they beat Russia... they also beat Saudi Arabia, then they have a chance of progressing.
Yeah, probably. As Abbas Matthew is saying here, except they improve on their next match, even with Mohamed Salah, Egypt will not go to the knockout stage. An exciting match.
I don't agree so much with Abbas, but anyway, that's his opinion. Now to another story, or the top story that we covered on Africa, that is not the top, but the Cameroonian story, which Paul Biya has decided to postpone or might postpone the elections in that country. We have several comments from Ngala Hansel Jefferson, who says, Biya does not own Cameroon and a tornado is building which no one will be able to contain. The handwriting is on the wall.
And Wamtamo Ba says, Amnesty International was pretty mild in its report. That is its report on Cameroon. The U.S. ambassador a month ago accused the military of summary executions, targeted killings, burning of villages and looting. The situation on the ground is definitely grave.
And Niceman Nightingale says, let Paul Biya postpone election in his country. It's not our concerns. We, the Amazonians, are busily claiming our territory from the dictator. So a lot of people who are criticizing Paul Biya for wanting to push the elections to next year.
But it is not clear. The parliament still has to debate and decide if that's the way forward
or not. Anyway, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And until next time, bye from us.